I'm going to, it's 7 p.m. This is the Planning Commission meeting on March 13th, and I'm going to call the meeting to order. Can we do roll call? This is Nancy Tosta.
Colleen Thompson.
Tina Carlson.
Nick Vincent.
Okay, we have a quorum. I am expecting our other members, but we'll go ahead and get started. Can I have a motion to approve the agenda?
I'll
I
make a
make
motion.
a motion to approve. Oh, go ahead, Colleen.
What do you need? I should have looked up. I'll make a motion to approve the March 13th agenda for the Planning Commission.
I second it, Tina Carlson.
Okay, any discussion on the agenda? And Elena Hughes just joined us. Sorry. It's okay. You're only 2 minutes late. All right, hearing no discussion, can I have a vote on the agenda?
Aye, Colleen.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Nick, aye.
Nancy Tosta, aye. Okay. Anybody have conflict of interest on anything that we have on our agenda tonight? Seeing none. Let's move on to agenda. I know I'm supposed to announce the agenda items. We're on agenda item number four, meeting minutes approval. January 15th. Let's see. Do you want to pull these up, Jessica? I know I went through and made comments. Most of them were rearranging the logic of it, and because things were out of order and changing us all to commissioners. Sometimes we were council members.
I was going to say, this is the AI, yeah.
This is the AI.
I know, it did not know how to keep our name straight.
I know. So I made them all commissioner and then last name, or I tried to. I went through and did that because sometimes it would say, you know, it would say Commissioner Daryl Fuller, and then it would say Nancy, and then it would say, so it
Yeah.
was just sort of odd throughout it. I also removed the summary at the beginning because it was just a little garbled. So I think all the actions and motions and things that we needed are in here. So there was one point, though, that's highlighted in yellow where it says Tina, Commissioner Carlson both made the motion and it seconded it. So I guess someone will have to listen to the recording to figure out what that actually was. I did not go back and listen to the recording. So I suppose that means we won't approve
Yeah.
these minutes at this meeting. Okay, let's move on to the February
And
13th.
can we just approve them with the correction needed? And so if, I don't know. Can we just
I think we just have to. I think the problem is we have to like cross-reference the recording to see what's actually right. Like we don't know what the change is, correct?
That's correct. So we can't
Okay.
actually make
Okay.
an amendment.
Okay.
We
Never
don't know
mind.
what it's supposed to be. Yeah.
And let the recording note that Daryl Fuller just joined us. Hi, Daryl. Okay. February 13th minutes was very similar, where I just tried to fix the order of things and fix our names and so on. So, anybody have any concerns about this? If not, I'll take a motion to approve. Sorry, what, Jessica?
I'll second it.
Did somebody make a motion?
Well, I thought you did. Oh, I guess you didn't finish,
I
did you? Sorry.
go ahead. You can move to accept them, Colleen.
will make a move that we accept the February 13th minutes.
There a second?
Second that, Elena.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Tina?
Aye. Sorry.
That's okay. Okay. Unanimous approval on the February 13th minutes on agenda item number 4. Agenda item number 5, public comments on agenda items. Do we have anybody in the audience who wants to make a comment? And we do have a couple of people online. Anybody in the audience have any comments, public comments on the agenda? Okay. Anybody online? Ashley, I think you're the only one, the only public up there.
Yeah, so I wanted to say that that in your public hearing about residential short-term rentals or the conditional use permits, that I saw on there that the owner should share a phone with the person that's living there, but I think since everybody has cell phones, then that should not be on there. That's my only comment.
Okay, thanks, Ashley. We'll take a look at that. All right, doesn't look like there are any other public comments. I do want to point out when we get to the RSDR public meeting, we do have, I didn't count them, 8 or 10 comments from the public that were sent in that are in the meeting folder. And I think I didn't actually check, Jessica, they're up online too. So anybody can look at those comments. So we'll take those under consideration when we get to the RSDR. Staff reports, Jessica.
I just wanted to report that this last month, for anyone who wasn't aware, that the mayor did resign. She resigned that night. And so right now is the interim mayor. It is John Baranth. And then that same night, Lacey Allen also stepped down out of her position and ending that night as well. So just with these quite a few changes that we have, for myself, that's losing Lacey, who does quite a bit of stuff like the minutes, recordings, things like that, that we can, I can hopefully take on that extra load and do it as efficiently, but just as things are kind of happening, to know that that is a big loss of hours when it comes to things that will be getting done. So just to make everyone aware of that, otherwise, no.
Thanks, Jessica. Erin.
Hi, everyone. So we didn't have any new applications of any kind this month, but there must be some old applications running around out there. Like, had somebody ask a question about one, and it seemed to me like it wasn't the right version of it. So just maybe in general, for everyone to help direct people to the website to get the correct versions of updated application documents.
Great, thanks, Erin. And I appreciate you adding this to your staff report. Let us know what applications have come in and giving us a little bit of info about them. I think it helps us understand what's going on with land uses in town. So thank you. Anything else? No other staff? No Lacey? Okay. Agenda item 7 is direction from the town council, our liaison report from John Baranth.
John Baranth here, town council. Be brief because you've got a big agenda tonight. First, I really appreciate the efforts that the PC members have been making between meetings. I do read the stuff that gets put in the folders, and I can see the online comments people have been making, and I can see people have been really paying attention and working. Much appreciated. I want the joint town council planning commission meeting to be productive, so it'll really help tonight if the PC considers what questions and issues they want to discuss with the town council. Some things that have come out of my discussions with Nancy and within the town council, definitely the general plan, the scope of the of any revision this year, the priorities of the items to work on, and the timing, because I think there's more there than you could possibly get done this year if you worked on nothing else. I do want to talk about making some progress on affordable housing, and I'm really open to suggestions from the Planning Commission on what we, it's been 2.5 years since we had that housing meeting. There were a lot of good ideas there. There was a survey that Elena did. We need to now start some town level actions to move forward on those issues. So comments about that from the Planning Commission would be really helpful in the discussion. Nancy's made some repeated requests for staff support. We can talk about that with the full town council. And I think we could share some information with you about the website. I'm strongly advocating that we go to one of the commercial municipal website providers. Looking at the small towns on this end of the state, there seem to be 3 market leaders. But you know, I think we need to talk about, to have a good meeting with any of those providers, they're going to say, well, what do you want? And I think top issues are citizen access for information. So you don't always have to go to the staff for every document. I think we need archiving, but other things that you people bring up would help facilitate that discussion. On RSTRs, I'll make a brief comment toward the end of the public input. So that's what I have.
Great. Thank you, John. Agenda item 8 is the opportunity to talk about anything that John just said. I wanted to build on the other thing that happened at the town council is they hired Elizabeth to do process analysis, look at how things get done, try to improve them, work closely with Jessica, and also to develop a new website. So she now has a contract with the town, Elizabeth Julian, to do those things. So I think it was a productive discussion. She had put in a proposal and the town council accepted it. So that may result in interviews or meetings with us just to think about, you know, how we do things and how things could be done more efficiently. But any comments on what John said? The joint meeting is at the end of our agenda tonight, so we can talk about what questions we might have that we want to put on there. But anything else on what John said that you all want to react to? Okay, everybody sitting here stone-faced. I'll assume that's a no. All right, a topic. Agenda item 9, near and dear to my heart. I would love to get this moved on to the town council. So these are our bylaws. If you want to pull those up, if you wouldn't mind, Jessica, in the meeting folder. thank you for the comments. Elena, I know you made a comment, and Daryl, you made several comments. I think they were productive. I went through today and just sort of looked at them and offered some reaction because I thought it might make it more efficient. So it's the top one there, not that one. Those are the old one. That's the old one. That one right there. So these are, we're required to have bylaws by state law. And we've been negligent. So the goal here is just to try to get something through. At the last meeting, we realized we had a lot of comments from John and we had a lot of comments from Michael. I ended up rewriting these the day after the meeting to incorporate most of what Michael had done. It seemed simpler, clearer, and I figured if he found them adequate, that was a good step forward. So if you want to scroll down a bit, that's So a suggestion that Elena had made would be to incorporate the Grant County language, which I think John had pointed out to us earlier. So I added that second paragraph there is the language. If you're all okay with that, we can include it. You might want to make it a little bit bigger. Anybody have any objection to adding that second paragraph? All right, I'm going to try to move through this because this isn't the main topic of our meeting tonight. Go ahead and scroll down if you don't mind, Jessica. Thanks. On 4.03, Daryl made a comment that we should change the second shall to should. My reaction to that is this is actually required by state law that we post this. I think, and it doesn't say a particular staffer shall do it. It says such support shall include running meetings. So I'm comfortable leaving it as a shall, but we can debate that. Any other thoughts on it?
I'm good with shall.
Tina, Colleen, Daryl.
Yeah, I'm good with shall.
Yeah.
That's fine. I mean, yeah, it's not the biggest thing.
Okay. Let's leave it as shall. 5.03, Daryl pointed out that there may be some topics that require a two-thirds vote and suggested language, which I put in there, shall carry the motion unless a motion requires a different statutory threshold to pass. Anybody have an issue with adding that language? You can just shake your head or nod or... Okay, looks like everybody's okay. All right, 5.06.6. And we did have some discussion about this previously. I ended up deleting the cease any presentation of information that has already been presented and acknowledged to simply say the chair reserves the right to stop any speaker making personal attacks and to stop applause or public outbursts. Everybody okay with that?
Yes.
Okay. And then 5.06.9, last sentence, the recommendation shall include reasons for the decision and cite appropriate supporting documentation. After much discussion with John, who has pointed out that case law requires that we do this, and we don't always do this, and we really need to start being more formal about doing this. And I said in my comments there, this is a concern because we don't have support staff and now we've lost Lacey. So, you know, the minute taking, this is very important in our minute taking, but I think something I can do is when we do make a decision, sort of summarize, we've decided to accept this because, and try to go through at least a couple of the reasons why. Well, accepting probably isn't the problem, but we've denied a CUP, for example, yeah, because this, it didn't meet these criteria. So we're clear on what the recommendation is we've made, and we can capture that in the minutes.
Okay. So
it's something I think we just need to be more conscious of. Everybody okay with that? And then 5.07, I'm not even sure what orders of the commission are. This is something Michael put in the draft he had. My suggestion is we delete this because it's not like we issue orders.
So I guess, so initially as expressing caution at saying, look, if we're going to say this, then we must, you know, we must do it, right? We can't put it down on paper and then forget about it and then realize later on that, oh, we said we'd do it and we forgot about doing it. That said, it's awful silly to put in a lot of work and then have it not be defensible, right? So if we're doing something, we'd like for it to stick. And if the only reason it doesn't stick is because we're bad at annotating it, then that's a shame that we just wasted all our time. And, you know, it's so 507, I don't think it's bad. I do have questions on like what exactly you said, like what exactly is a decision? Because sometimes we make, you know, we make a decision on a CUP, or sometimes we make it really small procedural decisions. And then also, does it need to include both findings of fact and holdings of law? Maybe we just say a decision of the commission on any topic shall be documented in writing, period. Maybe that's all we need to do, but I agree with, I get what Michael was saying by doing this, because if we're not going to put it down on paper, then we've got problems where, you know, we may have just squandered a bunch of time and created waste on attorneys, basically.
So could we,
I agree with Daryl. As long as our town lawyer is the one who wrote it, I don't ever really have too much of a problem. I think there's a reason why he does it, because he's our town lawyer.
I guess the thing is just, you know, if a decision is anything we pass to town council, or if it's anything we, any CUP or whatever we approve, I mean, if we have it in here, we just have to do it as a thing, I guess, which is fine. But let's make sure we do it.
I wonder if we could, given orders of the commission, again, is odd wording, because I don't really know what that is. I mean, we make recommendations to council when we're doing ordinances. We do make decisions on CUPs, and we're the final voice on the CUP. Which I see covered in 5.06.9. I wonder if we said the recommendation shall include written reasons for the decision and cite it. I mean, if we could sort of take, if it's the writing that's something that's added in 5.07, then could we include that in 5.06.9 and not worry about what orders are?
Right.
I wonder. Or maybe changing it, instead of saying a decision, maybe final decisions of the commission, because we don't have a lot of final. Most of our decisions are not final.
Right, they're recommendations.
But we do have some final decisions, and for that, it would be really smart to document it.
Okay, so let's see. The last sentence on 5.06.9 could say. I mean, it actually is sort of mixing up recommendations and decisions, isn't it? So we're making a recommendation to council, shall include the reasons for our recommendation.
Why can't it just be left as it is?
Okay. We can leave it as it is. We just need to make sure we do it, because it says shall.
Well, yeah, because right now
we don't.
It would be a new process, and it would be figuring out who does that.
Right. We could come back and add this in. I mean, given we're a little short staffed now and not sure what it says. And Tina.
And I agree with the short staffed. I totally agree with the fact that in some ways, whatever decisions we are made on anything that we are actually the final case on should be attached to whatever CUP is there, and not having to look back into the actual minutes, or, you know, searching for why the decision was made in the actual minutes. I mean, I feel like the decisions should be clearly made available with the documents that you know they refer to. I don't know if we hold on to CUPs that we don't approve of, So that's another thing that's, I think you're right. I think the procedural part of this is unclear to us right now. And I would be willing to say, let's table this until we have more. We can always vote another part of this document in as soon as it's clear. And again, with the staff being as they are, I don't, you know, it would mean a job for one of the planning commissioners or something to make
sure. I do think this is what you just said, Tina, documentation on CUPs, finding files, is one of the things Elizabeth is going to look at in terms of processes and procedures. I mean, how to, you know, I think Jessica inherited a filing mess, to say the least, perhaps. And now being able to know where you go to find CUPs that were submitted, whether they were approved or denied, we don't know that now. We don't have that ability to do those kinds of searches. So yeah, I'd be comfortable taking out 5.07, leaving 5.06.9, and trying to do our best to cite the reasons when we make a decision on anything or a recommendation. But
yeah, I don't feel super strongly either way. I'm fine with leaving it. And if we decide to come back to it,
we can do that too.
Leaving both of them?
Leaving it out. I apologize.
Okay.
Leaving 507 out and maybe adding it back in if we look into it more.
Other comments? Nick, Colleen, Daryl.
Yeah, I like the idea of coming back to this and waiting until we can figure out what the procedure is for it. Once we feel comfortable with that, then we can add it back in. There's certainly value in doing it, but we don't want to commit to something that we're not set up to do right now.
So I am very keen to hear Michael's opinion on what is the definition of the word decision here? I mean, is it a final decision, so meaning only CUPs, or is it something else? And then also whether we need to include both finding the facts and holdings of law, or whether we can drop the holdings of law documentation requirement. I think we do need to address it. It puts more work, you know, it's more work for us, but it's one of the smartest things we can do. However, when I say we can come back and amend this and add it back in, I am also in a little bit later on in the document, I'm going to advocate that we making amendments is not just a simple majority, that maybe we using a super majority or, you know, so it's not just super easy to throw in an amendment. So if somebody is viewed as a stick in the mud and then they happen to be sick, then you can sneak an amendment through. Like, I'm not saying that that's but it is a possibility. So I think it should be more difficult to amend this.
Okay. We're going to come back to that.
Yeah.
But I'm hearing, I think, well, Colleen, leave it in or take it out.
I already told you what I thought.
Can you repeat? You want to leave it in?
Yes.
Okay. I think, though, I'm seeing three of us say take it out. One option here is, and I've tried to do this, when we transmit things to the town council, I will point out where there are areas of disagreement. So it's in the cover letter. Now, where that goes in terms of our filing, I don't know. But we could submit this to the town council. They have to approve this and point out that we took this out because we weren't clear that we had the means to do it, nor exactly what it meant. And if they want to put it back in, they can do that. If Michael argues at the town council meeting that it has to be in there, then they can do that. But for our point, I don't know who's going to do this is part of our problem right now.
So I think we could get an answer from Michael in the next 2 weeks. And, you know, so I think we could answer it. So maybe it does go in at the, well, maybe we could tell the town council like, oh, we got an answer. And we think with, you know, just adding the word final at the front, you know, say final decision, that makes it more clear. And we're happy to add it back in so the town council can add it in.
Are you talking about 5.06.9 or
no, 5.07?
Because I think in the one above, it's a decision, any topic that we make a decision on. And it sort of lists approval, approval with conditions, denial, or recommendation. I mean, it makes a distinction between the topics that we will address, whether it's ordinances or CUPs or, so it's sort of covering all of it in my mind.
Okay, then maybe an additional question is, ask Michael, does the last sentence in 5.06.9, does that, should that say a recommendation or final decision? You know, so I guess the, what is the logic between 5.07 if we already had 5.06.9?
Well, that's sort of the point I'm making, I don't know what 5.07 means, and we don't, I don't see the need for it given what we have in 5.06.9. So that's why I'd suggest we delete it. And if Michael and the town council think it has to be in there, they can put it in there when they adopt these bylaws for us.
Yeah.
Does that work?
Yeah.
Also wonder if just like specific things like the subdivision ordinance or CUP ordinance or something should just state when we owe people something in writing, and then we don't, because it feels like that 5.07 in general kind of gets into that trap Daryl was talking about a couple meetings ago of just sort of like, if we say it, we have to do it, and any topic feels like we could get in trouble, but I'm good with leaving it up to the town council.
Okay. I did, seeing most of you acknowledge that we're not clear on exactly what this means, and but we're willing to accept it if it's critical to our work, we will let the town council decide. And in the transmittal I do, I will point out that we took this out. Does that work?
Because of 5.06.9.
Right. I mean, we think that covers what we do. And even 5.06.9, we're going to have to pay more attention to how we document decisions when we make them.
Correct.
Okay. Okay, moving along. 6.02, Jessica. Daryl pointed out, let's see, committees may be led by a commission member. Daryl said committees should be led by a commission member when a commission member is available. Any thoughts on this?
I think that this is a committee by the Planning Commission.
Go ahead, Tina.
A commission by the Planning Commission is basically needs to have someone who has been on the Planning Commission, who knows what the Planning Commission is wanting out of the committee. And so it helps to direct the committee not towards a decision that we might make on our own, but towards the problem that we are, or the issue that we are trying to get information from a committee. So I feel like if we don't have a Planning Commission member able to deal with the committee, then we should be just making decisions on our, you know, based on the whole Planning Commission.
So we did have shall in here, and we changed it at the last meeting to may. And Daryl is suggesting now we change it to should.
I like should.
I'm fine with should or shall. I wouldn't go for the when a commission member is available so
yeah,
much,
I
though.
Yeah.
I think a commission member has to be available.
Yeah. Okay. Shall, should.
Should. I'm fine with should.
Should. Okay. Does anybody object to should?
And I think there's good reasoning. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. Daryl, can I ask you just for clarification's sake, because it comes up again, what for you is better about should than shall? Just get me on your page there.
Shall or you shall know, when we say like shall or will or must, then there's a lot of case law and the English language that there's a long-standing meaning, right? So it means what it means. It means what we've always known it to mean. And that's just the smartest and safest thing to bet on.
I guess I don't see how should is any better.
Preferentially.
Mm. Okay.
You know, like that's what you want. That's the goal. But, you know, shall means come hell or high water. That's the way it is.
Yeah. Okay.
Should is like, well, that's what we really want. That's our goal.
Okay. Should is in between shall and may.
Okay. I'm good with that.
Okay.
All right. New every day.
Right. We found a compromise. Okay. I'm going to move on. All right. 6.05, what you were referring to earlier, Daryl, bylaw review and amendment. So I added some language, suggested some language in here based on your comment. These bylaws may be amended by presenting proposed amendments in writing. Well, this also expands a conversation I had with John where, you know, you don't want somebody showing up, a few members showing up, amending the bylaws in a meeting when no one has had any discussion about it previously. So amendments presenting proposed amendments in writing at any regular meeting of the commission and discussed and approved by a two-thirds majority vote of the commission at a subsequent meeting. Does that work? So it just means, you know, it might be the next meeting, it might be the meeting thereafter, but okay. Okay. Are we all okay with these now? Can I have a motion to recommend these and transmit them to the town council?
Yes, as Elaine, I'll make a motion to recommend and transmit the bylaws to the town council.
I'll second that, Colleen.
Thank goodness. Any further discussion? No.
thanks, Nancy. I know this was a lot of work.
Okay. All in favor, please say aye, and we'll have a voice vote on this.
Aye.
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 Aye. It's unanimous. Thank you. Okay. This means we don't have to talk about the bylaws at our next meeting. All right. Moving on to agenda item number 10. Discussion and public meeting on the RSDR code changes. So this is something that the town council gave to us based on action they took in January. Let me get to the RSDR stuff. And I actually would like to talk to you all about how I organized the meeting folder. I was getting too many documents in there, so I tried to separate it by subject. So all the RSDR material is in one place. The town council suggested that we separate the administrative aspects, the business aspects of RSTRs from the rest of the code. Tina and Nick formed a committee of Tina and Nick to take a look at these. And I think over much discussion, it was clear that it was really difficult just to take the administrative pieces out and, you know, still have logical code because there were problems with our RSDR code. So they ended up drafting some new code, which we're not going to go into great detail on tonight because we don't have a public hearing on it until our next meeting. But we asked Tina and Nick put together a great list of questions that were sent out on Pegboard. And we did receive, I don't know if you can pull up the public comments there, Jessica. We did receive quite a few comments. People took a lot of time to thoughtfully react to what was put out there. So we have these written comments, but given we are going to have a public, this is an informal public discussion. So I'll turn to the audience and say, you know, is there anyone here who wants to offer public comment on the RSDR situation in town? Not necessarily directly on our code, but sort of how RSDRs are managed in Boulder. So we can hear from the public, we can take a look at these comments. What I'd like us to do tonight is maybe go through some of the questions that seem to have arisen in the public comments. And I think Nick and Tina had questions like, is it a percentage or a number? Are the zones, you know, do we do zones? Are there, you know, tax implications? Do we follow Garfield County law? If we can have a discussion on some of these things to give Tina and Nick guidance so they can craft a cleaner code and then bring it back for our April meeting where we will have a public hearing. So that's my logic in how we handle this, but I'm open to other suggestions, particularly from Tina and Nick, who spent more time thinking about this than any of us. Any thoughts? I mean, otherwise, I'm just going to plow ahead with what I just said.
Thoughts from Nick or I, or
yeah, on what I just said. That we'll hear any public input that people want to offer tonight. You've got the document. The document's in the meeting folder. You can read all the comments that we received, and then I'd like us to have a discussion to give you some guidance on what we think, you know, might be better. The yay or nay of percentage versus hard numbers and zones and so on. So you've got a little more guidance from our thinking to move forward.
Great.
Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
Others okay?
I do appreciate Tina and Nick and all the work they put in into this. And it's not a task people probably willingly sign up for, because this is a kind of a rat's nest of an issue. And there's a lot of anxiety, frankly, because this one issue has the potential of completely changing the face of the town. So I do understand the anxiety. I do also understand people who, you know, maybe they would not have the ability to build their house if they could not supplement the income. And Boulder is not an easy or cheap place to build homes in. So I get that perspective as well. So my inclination is to fix strictly the procedural issues and to not make any changes, especially not grow it or shrink it as far as where we currently stand. And I would really like more input from the community. I'm sure we can get we've already got a good amount of input, but I'm sure there's more, because this is an important issue. And it's a big one, and it's one that absolutely could blow up in our faces. So I'm extremely hesitant to push more through than we have to. I think the less we touch it right now, just fix any procedural problems and leave everything else frozen. That's my strong inclination, but seek input. This year, we expect this year to be different than prior years. So we can sit and watch it and see what it does this year. And then maybe next winter we solve it.
Okay. Any other comments before I seek public input here?
Oh, well, so that I'm kind of confused. I thought it was for public input. So are you asking from, I thought.
I was asking on the process I suggested, which is, you know, we get public input and then we talk about some of the aspects of this.
Okay.
So I did. I went. I read through this. I looked up
the comments.
I read through what was presented. I guess I should say that, as far as the RSTR that is presented here, that came from the county, I guess, kind of, and the draft that we have of the residential short-term rentals. So I did look at all of that. I looked at everybody's comments. I read all of the letters twice. And then I called the clerk because I wanted to know if the questions that the town council asked, which John, I think there was four of them, or more, there was four of them that came from the town council as far as direction to us and Jessica, if those questions at the beginning were answered in this draft. That was my concern, was that we answered what the town council wanted from us. And for me, she went through this with me, and basically, can you tell me basically if, and that is what my concern is what the clerk has to do with this, because she's the one that brought it up months ago, and John knows about that too. So I kind of wanted to know from Jessica if this covered what they were asking as far as this draft that has been put together with the help of Nick and Tina. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think if you want to pull up those four questions, Jessica, that is in the folder,
right?
It's a work in progress, Colleen.
Because the other thing too was, I mean, with the comments of the public comments, there again, there's just so much. I mean, there are some things that you can just really narrow down that everybody's kind of focused on. I don't think that anybody has a real problem with the RSTRs. It seemed like the 15% or the 5, you know, like if you go through here and read everything, like I said, for me personally, this is kind of what I was interested in right now. And so,
and I think this is exactly what we're doing. Number four is pretty open-ended.
Yeah.
I mean, 1, 2, and 3 are explicit.
And the thing was I wanted to know from town clerk if these things, if she felt that they were in there. And I think that you found that they were, is that correct? That's fine. Cause that is what I want, that for me personally, that's what I wanted to hear was from the town clerk. If these questions, I don't know how else to say it. I've already said it several times.
So I, you know, Tina and Nick knew that this was the direction.
I understand that. I understand that too.
All right. I am going to, hearing no other comments about sort of using the process, if you will, that I suggested, I'm going to see if there's any members of the public that want to make comments on the RSTR. So we do have four members of the public sitting here in the audience.
Did you read those original four questions?
Can you make it bigger? So they wanted to remove the business regulation from chapter 153, which is our current RSTR code, to chapter 110. So it involves we'd have to have a hearing on it because 153 is land use code and we're changing it. Eliminate the annual CUP review and have a one-time land use review based on impacts and recommended mitigation measures. So that's sort of our CUP process and some change in 153, because right now it says every year, if you want an RSTR, you have to do a CUP, and that has not been enforced over the last several years. So the goal is to change it. And then 3 is replace the current formula with a fixed legislatively set number. So rather than 15% of the permanent housing, set a number, pick a number. Some of that got into, and then 4 is other issues including use of RSDRs to subsidize permanent housing, balancing economic and community character goals, inconsistency in regulating different types of rentals, Airbnbs, guest ranches, B&Bs, and we may recommend changes during the current revision or may defer these discussions to a later date. And we took the opportunity, given we were looking at the whole code, to do some changes, to think about some changes. Correct me if I'm wrong. Nick's sitting here nodding. So I think we've done all of these, or Nick and Tina have made a good attempt to start this, and we're going to refine it. Okay, public comment. Any input from the public? This is an open meeting. All right, then. Anybody online? Let me see online, Jessica. You can put this one down. Susan, Kelly, I know, Susan, you submitted comments, but you're welcome to make them again. So you can unmute yourself and go ahead and speak.
Yes, I wanted to speak not so much to how you determine the number of RSTRs, but more to the issue of fairness in distributing the permits. Once a person gets a permit, they effectively have it for as long as they want it, assuming they meet all of the obligations of renewal. They have it whether they use it or not, thus really depriving other people of the opportunity to have an RSDR. My thinking is I would like to see the number of RSDRs stay limited, because I think it is important in preserving the character of the community. But my thinking is that the RSDRs that are given out should have some kind of limit, time limit on them, and whatever that is, 5 years, 3 years, at which time it has to go back in the pool. If nobody else is applying, the owner of the expired RSTR can re-obtain it. But if other people are applying, they need to get in line and wait again for their turn to come around. I think that this would be important because it would give other people opportunities to make use of this pretty lucrative business opportunity. It would also allow communities or neighborhoods that have been shouldering the burden of having RSTRs to be moved around a little bit. And lastly, in the literature that you sent out, you noted that it's important to limit RSTRs because it deprives the community, the lucrativeness of an RSTR deprives the community of longer term rental opportunities. So it seems kind of grossly unfair that just by being in first in line, you get this opportunity for lucrativeness, and other people who may have property that they want to rent have to settle for a less lucrative opportunity. It seems that if you had term limits, people who had property to rent might share the responsibility of providing long-term as well as shorter-term rentals. So those are my thoughts on the matter. Not so much changing the quantity, nor do I really care about whether it's by district or by absolute number. I care that there is an opportunity for more than a select few to be able to make use of the RSTR as a business opportunity.
Okay, thank you, Susan. Anybody else? Okay. Mark or Jen, make up your mind.
I forgot all about the four questions. Mark Nelson. I'm not going to say a whole lot. I want to start off by saying it's super important that about language. These discussions you have about language, it's super important about language because case law has proven that ordinances and policies are very challengeable using undescriptive words, and more definitive words make ordinances, policies, anything more defendable in court. Right. When you start getting into non-descriptive words like shall or may or might, they're too easy to be deemed arbitrary and capricious based on your decisions. That's why they. So I just wanted to say that's why you need definitive words, and that covers everything you do. Well, so on the RSDRs, I didn't write in. I wanted to kind of read everybody's comments before I wrote anything, and then they were kind of late coming out, so I didn't really write comments. I made a later date, but some of the things I picked up on is one of the things I was really happy about was on the comments that were written was that people are starting to recognize that short-term rentals are commercial use, because there was a lot of discussion up front that, oh no, it's just a way to make a little extra money and more like a CUP than a commercial use, but people are starting to recognize that they are a commercial use and even a state. Now, some of the arguments that I've heard is like, well, I can't do this and I can't do that if I don't have this opportunity. And, you know, I was on the board of appeals for many years. And one of the things I did learn is that manufactured hardships are not applicable. You know, you can't allow somebody to manufacture a hardship and then, you know, write your ordinances to comply to those. I want to say that a lot of good comments here, but I want to say Keith Watts and Lisa Vargas and Jennifer Gerlings was pretty good. My favorite comments were by Matt Cochran, who was your former chairman and knows planning. And I think he was right on there. And I wish I would have said that the way he said it. He's pretty good doing that. And so if you want to know how I feel, you know, if you've read those comments, kind of sums it all up for me.
Right.
One other thing I want to talk about is this. Susan Kelly brought up a great point about fairness, and this is going to be the hardest thing to do, right? And come out of this with our skins. It'd be the hardest thing to do. And I don't know, you know, I like the idea of just saying we're going to have so many, and that's it. I'm not so sure that will hold up. And as far as the 15%, that is flawed too, because as you know, geometrically, as you increase building, that 15% is going to translate into more allowed geometrically. And so you're kind of losing your ability to curtail that kind of growth. So, but I think there might be a possibility of still using a percentage, but by adjusting it with some kind of a growth formula. That you start at 15%, and as you grow, maybe you start bringing it down. You set a limits, and you know, when you get to there, 15 becomes 14, 13, 12, all down until then it kind of cancels out, right? But, you know, personally, I wouldn't mind seeing them all go away. And the only way to do that is to just accept the ones you have now and let them become non-conforming uses instead of allowed uses, right? And then the whole idea of non-conforming uses is that over time, you can phase out non-conforming uses. And this is one of the tools that you guys really haven't examined enough is the whole idea of non-conforming uses, and just not in short-term rentals, but in all other areas of maybe some of the things that we have and don't have. The argument that we have to like allow, because we have some violations, we have some existence of something here and there that we have to allow to continue, that's not good planning, you know, and planning professionals have controlled that by, you know, making non-conforming uses an allowed use, but over time, you know, they kind of phase out. And so I want you to think, maybe read up on those a little bit, and probably use more of my share of time. So
thanks
very much, and good luck with that.
Thanks. Anybody else? Jen.
Yes. Hi, this is Jen Bach. I was thinking about all these things to say. Mark said a lot of them, and we didn't even discuss that beforehand. But in reading the public comments that were emailed, I also agreed very strongly with Matt Cochran about the nature of Boulder and becoming less discriminate does actually change the nature of the place. And again, what Keith and Lisa said, don't Moab Boulder. We don't want to accidentally slip into becoming a place that's driven by tourism as opposed to enhanced by tourism. Jennifer Gehrling said that Airbnbs or residential short-term rentals are commercial operations, and indeed they are in residential spaces for that reason. I think that we should adopt the part where they get inspected for the ones that we have. They're running a commercial operation. A long-term rental, to address Anson's comment, is different from a short-term rental, and that usually the renter would have renter's insurance in a long-term rental situation. There's a lease, there's responsibilities on each part, and there's, you know, a sort of a mini lease with a reservation on a short-term rental. But as that person is running something that's changing occupancy very frequently, you want to make sure that in you're running a commercial operation, that it is being run in a way that is safe for everyone and conducive to that commercial operation. As far as moving it to business regulation, I'm not sure how I feel about that, because having the CUP review allows observation and reflection upon how the rental is being utilized, and changing it to just a business thing, it really takes away any kind of attention, I guess, to details beyond did they renew their license, did they pay their taxes, especially if you don't require inspections. How do I phrase this? So moving it into just administrative, and especially if we aren't doing great at enforcing things, it makes it become more of a, we're not going to worry about that kind of deal, I think. As far as a percentage versus the hard number, I feel like we should have a hard number, perhaps for review periodically, maybe not super frequently. It could be theoretically based on about 15%. But again, if we start growing and then 15% becomes that much more, I really do feel like, because it's such a lucrative option to have a short-term rental compared to the income derived from a long-term rental, it super competes with our need for housing. And if we have a need for housing, like, why are we even entertaining the notion? And so what I think Mark says about having non-conforming uses that eventually over time sort of willow away, it's better for the long-term rentals. It's for our community. I mean, for our people trying to have places to live. It's interesting. We're pursuing the short-term rental discussion and that there's advocates for more, while the same people are saying we don't have enough long-term rentals. So it's a juxtaposition of opposing forces. So I think that's everything I wanted to say.
Thanks, Jen. Anybody else? Nope. No, but
okay, John Varanth here, and I will try very hard to speak as a citizen, not as a town council member, which, because this will eventually come back to me, but I'm going to talk from a citizen's perspective right now. As far as there's a confusion here about the number versus percent. And this really ties into the substantial evidence in the record that you were talking about earlier. You can say we want 15 RSTRs because it is 15% of the number we think we have of permanent dwellings as of this date. That is our basis. We document. That's how we came up with that number. Or we could say we want 7 because that's what we've got right now. And that would be our basis. Whatever it is, if it's legislatively set and somebody wants a change, there's a clear procedure. You go to the town council, you request an ordinance change, and the town council could say, well, we'll change 7 to 10 and take a vote on it. If you have a percentage, as we have learned, you are going to have to triple the size of the ordinance because you're going to have detailed procedures for doing that calculation. Procedures that are clear, fair, enforceable, and defensible. A definition of what we call a permanent dwelling. What do we do if somebody moves out of town? Now the number of permanent dwellings dropped. Oh, then we have one less RSTR allowed. You have an enormous number of confusions that would, so it is not going to be administratable to have a percentage. That was the original reason the town council said, we need to go to a fixed number. And now I speak as a town council member. But the point I want to make as a citizen is a percentage can be used as how you did the reasoning to set that number. But then once you set it, you just set it and it doesn't have to be recalculated continuously. I do actually in my notes have something very close to what Mark said. And that said, I'm really open to the community preferences on this because we're balancing community character and economic opportunities. And, you know, we could simply prohibit future RSTRs, like Mark said, and make the current 7 basically legal non-conforming uses. They could continue, but we don't do any more. We could do that if that's what the community preference is. On the other hand, we have a loophole so big, I don't think people realize it because nobody's been walking through it. But let's say I want an RSTR and somebody says, well, there aren't any available. So I say, well, I'm going to serve them hot oatmeal for breakfast. It's a bed and breakfast inn. Bed and breakfast inns have no cap on the number, no regulations on where they're located, and none of the detailed requirements that we have for RSTRs. So all I have to do is claim my place is a bed and breakfast inn. Oh, and by the way, our ordinance says that they should provide meals, not shall. So I should provide them a hot breakfast. And now I'm a bed and breakfast inn, and I can drive through that loophole. We have a problem. So I could be open, though, to saying, let's just treat them like we're currently treating guest ranches and bed and breakfasts. Why are we doing those two as what's very loosely and very strictly if we called it an RSTR. So I'm open to the community input on that. A couple other clarifications. People talk about commercial use in residential zone. And although it sounds harsh, I do need to remind people, the GMU zone is not a residential zone. It's a multiple use zone. And in our zoning ordinance, what's allowed is activities compatible with agriculture. Not compatible with residences, but compatible with agriculture. Now, that's a whole different issue that the Planning Commission will need to deal with someday. But just remember that when people buy in the GMU zone, they are buying in intrinsically an agricultural zone. And that's actually why our table of uses is a slightly different between the LDR and the GMU. Along that line, I'll leave that one. I do respect Susan's comment about the, you know, what if people have a RSTR permit, but don't use it? Again, that gets back to balancing community character versus economic opportunities. Someone might say, I'll get an RSTR license and just sit on it because I don't like having RSTRs. So I'll take one of them off the market. And they see it as a community service because they're reducing the number of transient tourists. Something that I did see in the comments that does need to be looked at You know, although on one hand, you have a lot more income with RSTRs. Somebody's got to do the cleaning every couple, 3 days. And I'm not sure all the owners are cleaning their own units. And that leads to, where does the person who's cleaning the units expected to live? Moab, actually, if you want to get a hotel permit, a business license for a new motel in Moab, you have to actually include providing worker housing as part of your business plan. Because they said, we can't have these people coming into town, hiring people, and then not worrying about where they're going to live and dumping that problem on the community. So that's actually an interesting issue of who's maintaining these RSTRs. The last one, though, picking up on Susan's comment, you need to remember that as a planning commission, you deal with land use. With almost every, no exceptions, land use decisions are permanent. Yes, somebody, the first one who got the RSTR has an advantage, but then the first guy who filed for water rights up on the Boulder watershed also has a preferential position. It's a property right. And I think it would be very, very, very difficult to make a land use decision that had a finite expiration time. So that's something to consider, that the purview of the planning commission is land use, and land use decisions are essentially property rights. I think that's all I have. I will have more. Oh yes, I do have one more. So Daryl, you frequently bring up the concern of not making lawbreakers out of citizens who are doing ordinary things. And if we look at our special events section of the town ordinances, we have a whole bunch of very detailed exemptions because we don't want to require things for small events, family events, church and school events, and so forth. We say they're exempt from our special events permit process. In the terms of, if we're going to regulate RSTRs tightly, the definition and the needs to be clean, and there should be exemptions so that we don't inadvertently restrict things that are traditionally considered legitimate uses of a single family home. Things that aren't an RSTR in my mind are allowing friends and relatives to use the home while you're away. Allowing donating use of your home to a church charity auction. Hosting an event for a nonprofit. So really any non-commercial use that doesn't involve cash payment to the owner should not be considered an RSTR. Those are things that you're allowed to do with your home. And we don't want to make somebody a lawbreaker because they're doing it. Okay.
Thanks, John. Okay, anybody else? And just for the public record, the comments that we have received thus far have been summarized and are on the website tied to the agenda. So if anyone wants to read those, they are there. And for planning commissioners, one other thing Michael Wynn sent me today, he sent me two bills that have passed. And one of them relates to specifically to RSTRs, and I haven't digested them. I put one of them in the folder. So Tina and Nick, you can take a look at what this bill says. It has new definitions. A lot of it seems to apply to counties. There was one of the bills was 35 pages long, and I didn't read the whole thing. I asked Michael to highlight what he thinks would be relevant to what we have to do here in Boulder. But just FYI, there are some, this is brand new legislation out of the state that potentially applies to RSTRs, and tax collection is one aspect of it. So something that'll have to be taken into account. Okay. So back to my suggestion for a process that, and Tina and Nick, given we're going to dump this in your lap to draft a revision of what you've already started, which I think is a great start. And I do think, despite the fact that the 4 points didn't, cut to your point, Colleen, didn't necessarily say rewrite the code, I think even in John's comments, there are several things that have come up that necessitate taking a look at the code and trying to figure out what it is we're trying to do in Boulder. You know, B&Bs, guest ranches, and Airbnbs, are they the same? Do we treat them the same? Do we regulate them the same? So I think there's good reason for us to spend the time to try to get this right. So if you two have any questions as we go through this, you know, throw them out to us here on the commission. But I'd like to just affirm that we're in agreement as you guys move forward about some of these things. So hard number versus percentage. Town Council has suggested a hard number. Anybody, you know, are we going to argue against that? Tina.
Okay, so my initial feeling was that the percentage was really a good thing to hold on to because it was something clear. It was something that we could identify. I found out how we did it before. There is a process that could happen yearly. It would take a bit of time, but it could be done. I talked to the ombudsman.
You got it.
Anyway, the woman said that actually probably a fixed number would be fine. And so I'm back to that. So I'm okay with fixed number. How we come up with it, I guess, is up to us to decide or recommend. That's all I have to say about that.
Okay. Anybody else on fixed number versus percentage?
I kind of like a fixed number too. I mean, it just seems like the percentage, I thought we had a fixed number when we did it the first time. It seems like there is a lot of work that goes with percentage. If we did have a fixed number, even if we left it at the numbers that we have right now, and maybe look at changing them or you know, in the future, like going back to them in the future and looking at them, but it does seem like a hard number is easier.
Okay.
As far as the administrative too.
Okay. Anybody have any other opinions on this?
Fixed number, I'm a huge fan of. I think a lot of the reason we're addressing this is because of questions like, what exactly is the percentage? How do I count it? Who lives here? Who doesn't live here? There's a litany of questions that we can just completely avoid by just having a fixed number.
Okay. Do we want to give any guidance to Tina and Nick as to what that number should be?
Well, I just mentioned, I think it should be left as the number that we have right now. It seems to work, which I think is 4.
I think it's 7 or something.
No,
I think
it's not that many.
Yeah.
No, not total, in a zone. I meant in a zone.
In a zone, 4 yeah. In a zone.
In a zone, or which would be 12. So that means that we have 12. So we leave it at 12 for
okay.
Now, you know, and then it would give us a number to start with, and then we can always move forward with that.
Okay.
Yeah,
everybody.
Where 7 came from.
Okay.
Sorry, I can speak to that just a little bit. I do think, you know, out of the two, the with a percentage or number base, that the number does make more sense. I would like to say too that it doesn't appear that we have that much interest currently in town for people to create RSDRs. And you know, the one problem with the number is that it does create a limitation for someone to create an opportunity, economic opportunity. So they could be forced out of it and have to go through a long process to try and change the number and put some burden on that person. Like, considering that we currently don't have any applications, it's just something to consider with the number, is that I think really the strongest thing we have right now for SDRs is that you have to be a permanent resident. I think that greatly limits the people from out of state who want to create RSDRs. And then additionally, the 182 day limitation also, I think greatly discourages people from trying to create an RSDR like strictly for profit, which we don't want. Yeah.
Okay. So I'll try to summarize this. Colleen said 12, four per zone. We all okay with zones as, and maybe slight redefinition on them, which you guys suggested. I know I did some tweaks on it to try to clarify, you know, what roads, what boundaries are we putting in here? But there's an upper, middle, and lower is what it comes down to, with more clarity on where they are. Everybody good? This is, we're talking here to give you guys direction, okay? So some of it reaffirms what you'd already put in there. You guys being Tina and Nick, sorry. I'm looking at you both. All right, Garfield County inspections, what do you think about that? And there are other aspects of the Garfield code that we probably should talk about.
So I didn't hear anything about zones.
Does that mean so the zones, I just said, you know, we were all sort of nodding here. And I'm sorry, Tina, oh, I forget okay. that you can't actually see us. We can see you very plainly. So yes, zones, people are comfortable with three zones, you know, as described, as clarified in your language, and four per zone. So it's a starting point. I mean, you know, this is all debatable. And I was moving on to the Garfield County, a lot of the Garfield County code. So I went through the code today and highlighted in yellow those sections that I thought had some pertinence to what we might want to put in Boulder. So you can take a look at that. That's my opinion. But inspections are one thing that came up in the comments. So I'd like to hear comments here.
Yeah, I was just going to provide some context to that. You know, after reviewing the ordinances, there's a lot in there that really has no sort of enforcement to it. It's just like you should do this. And with that, it was interesting to look at the county and see that, you know, in terms of like health, safety, I forget the third one, but they introduced that that inspection for new applications, and it does allow us to enforce what before we really don't have anyone to look at. Like largely, we just have Pete to go out and look at the fire safety, and we have in the parking. And then we have a review from the zoning administrator. That's about all we have to actually check on these applications on site.
I think it's a good idea to do the inspection without giving specifics. I know someone who lived in a building at one point that was then applied for as an RSTR. And when the application was happening, the person who used to live there was like, well, that'll never pass because the septic there is all messed up. And I was like, well, we don't check that. You know, we have no way of checking those things. We just have to make sure they have fire extinguishers in the right place and all of that. So I do think an inspection is a good idea.
So my impression of the inspection was that we would get someone from Garfield County to do it and there'd be a payment for it. So it wouldn't be, you know, we had to enforce it.
Right. That's what I think too.
So, because they charge, I mean, Garfield County charges for an inspection of an RSTR. And I assume, you know, that would be the case for what we would do.
Yeah, I'd like to add to that too. Like in order to have the county do this inspection, uh-huh. We do need to follow their inspection list. So he doesn't want to come out and inspect other things we've added to it. There's one standard that we would have to adopt, and it's pretty clear and straightforward, and I think reasonable in alignment with what we've already stated in our ordinances.
That's good to keep in mind, though.
Yeah. And so, Nick, is that, so that's kind of what my question is too, is if we want them to be regulated and enforced, we're going to be asking the county to come over for enforcement, which we don't have any other kind of enforcement here in town, but it will be for our STRs, which will be something that'll be a first time thing. And so when you, in this draft, even have you included that in this draft?
I can speak to that. So it's not necessarily a new thing, because the county does come out and do building inspections.
But what I'm saying is,
it's pretty similar to that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying is, he said that he would come out and do that if we did certain things. Yeah. And all I'm asking is that in here right now? That's all I was wondering. Have we met that? Maybe I should have we met that? Or is that something that we're going to try to do, is meet that?
It's in the draft.
Right.
It's in the draft.
Thank you.
And it's also, you can see it, Colleen, in the Garfield County code that's in the meeting folder.
Yeah.
It's the same thing, but it's in the draft. It's not in our current code.
Oh, I know. I know that. And all I'm talking about is the draft. I'm not talking about our, because he's not coming out, or we're not paying him. So I do know that. So that's, and I saw the difference between the Garfield County code and this code that they are creating. So I was just kind of asking hypothetically, is that something that's kind of being put into this code that you're drafting? And is that why? Because we want somebody to start coming in inspecting them.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole reasoning behind it is like, why have the rule if we're not gonna check on it?
But we have lots of rules that nobody comes and checks on, you know, and so it will be, we are setting a precedence, you know, as far as creating something that an inspector will come over and do. I mean,
And I would like to add one more thing, mostly just to the people watching, if they do have currently have an RSTR permit, like this would be for new applicants. And this is not a yearly inspection. It's just for the application process for new applicants.
Good to know.
So I'm assuming Jared is the one coming around doing it, and has he been doing this, or is this just something all the towns in the county are plopping on his plate right now?
Yeah, Jared has been doing this. It does get deprioritized in terms of, Jared works for the building department, and so it doesn't get the same treatment as you would scheduling a building inspection. He has to first fulfill his building inspections before you can get the RSDR. So the one potential burden here is a longer wait time. It's most likely only an additional week, when typically you can get a building inspection in a few days.
And I would have to assume that if there are any RSTRs in the draw or Salt Gulch or the Mesa, that they're being inspected, because they're all Garfield County. So
that's a good point.
I mean, you know, we're no different than our surrounding neighborhoods.
I hadn't thought about that.
Okay.
Can I ask a question to the fees?
Yeah.
Okay. So right now, for Jared to be like the county inspector for the town pays for that. Like, we ask him to do the service and we pay. Now there is like, you, the builder, or you, the person, you go in and you pay a fee. Does that work the same way? Like, did he say that? Like, so yeah, like when I, Jessica, say I need a building inspection, I have to pay this fee. But as the town, we actually pay Jared.
This would not be the town.
And so I'm wondering if there's like a contracted amount that the town says, hey, we're asking you to do this for us. Or does the person just pay for it?
It's the applicant.
Tina might have that information. But she's the one who spoke with.
With the building permit, is it a, like with the building permit, how it currently is it like the town pays like a contracted fee per application, or it's like annually? Okay. So there might be something annually on top of that.
I just think that would be nice. I mean, it's not.
It's good to know.
But usually he's not just doing that out of the kindness of his heart and what the person pays. We pay him to do that as a town.
You know, Tina is there's some beyond what an applicant would pay for the inspection? Would the town pay something to Jared to do this? No, I didn't.
Not that I understand. It's a set thing. The applicant sets it up with him.
And a first time, you're talking about first time, that's not going to be very, I mean, he won't be coming out here at all then.
Yeah, well, I do think, totally. So this, you know, this is a conversation, you know, do we grandfather in everything?
Yeah.
Or do we say starting January 1st of 2026, when you get your business license, you have to have an inspection? That's an option. I mean, that, you know, it's because if we want these to be safe, then we ought to know that they've been inspected. So
yeah,
that's something we can talk about, whether that goes in the code. Number of days. So we have 118.
Sorry. There's one other thing I want to specify with this. A lot of the things that are already in our code and in this draft, and it's basically the draft is not really changing what we required before or adding anything other than this inspection idea, which actually the town talked about, town council talked about. In this draft, so the county inspector, there's a process that's in this draft that talks about how the person goes from getting, an initial approval, you know, there's a space in this zone, blah, 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 blah. And then then the next process is to go through the county building inspector. And the county building inspector told me that there are a few things that happen for RSTR buildings that are not building code, like residential building code things. And I think it has to do with specifics of the rules are in his, he looks at that they have the rules. He looks like they have a fire extinguisher specifically, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. So it's a little different than just a plain building permit.
Right. And I do think they're in the code that you guys shared with us.
Yeah.
Okay. So there are other components of the Garfield code that, the transient room and sales and use tax numbers. And this, the bill that Michael Wynn sent to us has some language about this. I didn't take the time to try to analyze it, but it may be something you need to look at as we look at changing this code. So just FYI, the tax reporting, I mean, having, because we haven't necessarily been doing that. And part of the importance of that is it is revenue to the city. So, or to the town, we need to know that. A number of days, we have 182 days. Is there any reason to change that? That's half time. That assumes that you live in the house, you know, when you're not renting it out. So that contributes to the permanent residency. Any, leave it as it is. Term limits, is it appropriate to think about the creating opportunities for more people, different people to have RSTRs, to move them around the community? So it's not in our code now. So
for the other part, sorry, just the one thing that I did see, so it is in the ordinance now, but I don't think I saw it in the draft, was just the part that right now, like if you don't use it, there is a review and that there are a couple things that would make it so you could lose that if you're not using it. That didn't seem to be wording in the new draft, which maybe that's because it's not on a renewal process. So just on that part, because if you do just have this one-time thing, it could just sit there for forever and they don't have to use it. And maybe that's okay. But
use
I do
it.
Think that's something.
Yeah, use it or lose it.
Yeah, and maybe you're okay that if they don't use it, it's fine, that's still up to them.
Somewhere there was code about the minimum number of days you had to use it, which seems like that would be hard to track.
Yeah.
Tina?
I thought that the part of the you know, I'm not gonna, I will double check that, but there was a part of the application for a renewal that included the number of, you know, the tax information. Do we want to have like a number of days that they have to use it? Is that what you're referring to?
No, well, that's sort of what we're talking about. I mean, if you don't use it, do you get to keep it? And is there a minimum number of times you have to rent it out? I mean, do we want to say something about that? This is our prerogative to make a proposal. We'd have to figure out how to enforce it, obviously.
Right. Yeah, that's if you don't care if they don't use it, then why are you checking to see if they're doing those things? Because if they aren't, then you're not doing anything about it.
But in the, okay.
Yeah, I think what Tino was going to speak to is, yeah, what we were looking at adopting in here, and this might be in this new state law bill as well, but part of the renewal process would be to, you have to formally submit your tax documents and proof of nights. And I do think that would be really beneficial for us to add into it. It's something that the county does have in their ordinance. Because largely, I mean, going into this, working with Tina, there's just so limited information in terms of like analyzing the actual RSDRs themselves. You know, we know the number of them, but, you know, how active are they? You know, is this person using the RSDR for 10 days? Are they, or are they abusing their RSDR and using it for 250 days? And then also we don't, I wasn't able to get any good information on the actual tax revenue generated from these. And I think that's something definitely that our town could be missing out on, and that is really a beneficial part of having RSDRs. You know, we have very limited ways that we generate money for the town, and
right.
It would be very wise of us to require these documents, which the county does. It sounds like maybe now state law requires, and then we can easily track and kind of inform these other decisions about, you know, should we have a minimum amount of nights to renew your.
Okay, well, I'm not hearing anyone say we should have a minimum number of nights, but Tina.
Can I just say that looking back through this, that particular decision is going to be under the business license decision. We did not get into what has to go into the business license for an RSTR because that wasn't our job, right? That will be in the business license. When they go get a business license, there's a specific thing. You need this, this, and this. You need your tax records for the RSTR and, you know, all and whatever it is. And that part has not even been done by us.
Right. So I do think, I mean, we've delegated that to the town council because it's not a land use process. It's an administrative business process. But I do think as we are pulling things out of this code, it would be helpful to keep a running list of those things that need to be addressed. So, and someone on the town council is going to have to do it. I want to come back to, so just to clarify, we're not saying any minimum number of days. I mean, that may be business license, but we're not even going to recommend that. How about the idea of turnover of, you know, you get to do this for 3 years or 5 years? Anybody want to try to put that into our code?
I'm curious about, this is a little bit of a swerve, but it's related to that, passing what we need to pass next month and revisiting the bigger questions, because I think that some of them are rabbit holes that we could go down.
Okay.
And I think they're worth going down. I also think maybe Daryl said it earlier, but I do think it's worth trying to get additional public input. I think we could do another survey, maybe one that's like a link that's easier to complete or something, or even just like more pegboards, more information. I think a lot of people even like kind of a long title and RSTR in there. I don't know that everyone, if people aren't paying attention to planning commission stuff, I don't know that they know what that means.
Right.
So I don't think that people necessarily know that this was up for review. And I think that people have opinions probably, and I'd be curious what they are. Cause I know that this was thought about a lot when it was first passed, but now it's been happening and I'm curious what people think.
Okay.
Now that it's been unleashed.
Good, good point. I guess the only other topic I thought we might want to address is the notion of B&Bs guest ranches and Airbnbs? Are they, should they all be considered, you know, they all have the same outcome, transient tourists sort of in and out? Should we include them all under, you know, this RSTR code?
Since John let the cat out of the bag, do they require a CUP to get a bed and breakfast? Or if that's the case, then, you know, what Lana just said, ditto. Let's do what we need to do. Let's not do too much in haste, and let's get input and use the benefit of time to figure it out. Because we absolutely should think about, do we want anybody to get around this by just throwing open an Airbnb or a bed and breakfast. I can write down on a post-it note the instructions on heating up your oatmeal, and I don't think we can accomplish it by next month,
why don't we throw it out, Tina, Nick, take a look. I have the impression from the town council and just from other folks I've spoken with that they are all very similar. So why aren't we treating them similarly? If it's a huge amount of work, you know, pulling it out of other code and trying to put something in this, then yeah, let's just leave it the way it is. But if it's possible, as you guys are going through this, to think about that. Obviously it affects the numbers because, you know, we do have B&Bs and guest ranches. And so those numbers would be part of the 12 that we've said.
Oh, I don't think that would go over very well. I mean, my first thought is I don't think that would go over very well. My other comment about B&Bs, well, the people that are trying to get their RSTRs, if we lump the guest ranches and the B&Bs in there, I'm not going to make people very happy. And I do want to say something about B&Bs, because I remember Ellie let us have this information. If you have a B&B, there is a state code that you have to, that you belong to as far as being a bed and breakfast. And she has things too that she is required to do as a B&B through the state. I remember one time her coming and talking to us, not talking to us, but making a comment about the distinction between a B&B. Like, they're not lumped together. They don't, you know, I don't think they want to be lumped together.
So Garfield County
yeah.
says if it's listed on Airbnb, yes. VRBO, it's all the same. You treat them all the same, whether you're a guest ranch or a B&B. So
that's in Garfield County?
It's in Garfield County. Yeah. Well, they're.
Yeah. It's a good point.
So that's something to look at. I mean, it's in the Garfield County code. Anyway. How about we leave that one? You know, if there's a logical way forward, a clear way forward, if not, you know, that's a future discussion.
Can I make a quick comment?
Yes.
I think we shouldn't bother with that one yet either and do it in the future. I think the B&B thing either needs to be, taken out and lumped in, or it needs a lot more information. Because right now, if I were going onto our code and trying to start a B&B, there's very little information. It's listed once in the definitions under a public accommodation. It's in the table of uses as potentially compatible in all zones other than commercial. And it's listed in the parking section, but it doesn't give you, I wouldn't know how to start a bed and breakfast. I know you can go to the state code, but the state code has everything we have anyway.
Yeah.
So I think that either needs to come out because it's, allows for a lot, or it needs a lot more information put in. I'd be tempted to take it out if we didn't have one operating right now, just until we can fix it. I'd be tempted to just strike it, but we do have one operating. which maybe doesn't matter because once again, we don't enforce things. So maybe we,
take it out
and let them keep operating, but not allow for new people to sign up for it. And certainly I don't think we should let people just start and then be grandfathered in because they see there's conversation about RSTR and they go for a bed and breakfast now.
Well, and I think the other category is guest ranch, which, you know, we really,
that does have definition.
The guest
and
ranch
state
does
law.
No, in our ordinance, there it's under guest ranch.
Right, but I'm
and
not.
I think we have three of them.
Yeah, I think we have three. I'm not sure that any of them are offering ranch services. Yeah. That they're doing anything other than RSTR. I mean, it's having stayed in them. I will say that. I mean, it's so. You know, that's something I think we just need to consider whether. So, all right, this is a, as time permits and logic allows, maybe do something about it. If not, we'll handle it later. Anybody else in, based on the public comments or anything that we've talked about now, are there topics that you think we should try to clarify our intent and our direction? So Tina and Nick can proceed. Not at this time.
But I have plenty of thoughts when we do a deep dive.
Okay, well, our so the path forward, our intent here is they take the comments that were put into the RSDR code. They look at Garfield County. They look at all the public comments. And you draft the perfect code for our next April 17th meeting when we will have a public hearing on the ordinance language. Our goal is to pass this to the town council shortly after that April meeting. So keep that goal in mind. Anything else on RSDRs? Thank you all for bearing with us on this. Okay, I'm going to move on to agenda item number 11, which is the general plan update.
Possibly take a 2-minute recess.
We could take a 5-minute recess. If it's okay. We're adjourned for 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Here, Daryl.
Our public is dropping like flies.
The little yogurt things.
Okay. Agenda item number 10 is, or number 11 is the general plan update. As John noted in his liaison report, this will be a topic at the joint meeting, which I think we talked about the joint meeting at our last meeting, but we didn't talk about a date for it.
Yeah.
So we'll.
For the joint meeting?
Yeah.
Didn't I see it was on the 27th?
It's on our agenda, but you don't know that
date. It's already because, on my calendar.
Okay.
It's like, oh my God.
Good. You're way ahead of us, Colleen.
Okay.
So a few folks went through the general plan and made comments. Not all of you did. It's a long document. What do I think here? There are things that need updating. I've actually had several conversations with community members who have said, I want to be involved if there's an update. We will get guidance from the town council PC joint meeting on the scope and timing and priorities. I would like to suggest that we have a committee to sort of take a look at this in a little more detail like we did with the RSTR code. And I am willing to volunteer to be a member of that committee and would love another council member to, or a commission member to join. And then I think I've had some folks in the community express an interest and we could put out a call if we want to do some work. How much work we're going to do will depend on our joint committee discussion, but so I think there are some, we know there's some updates that are needed. We know there's some changes that the town council has suggested to being, we look at the commercial, the change that was made between 2019 and 2021 eliminated commercial zones, but made it so we had the means to approve commercial uses. So it's less formal in terms of a land use designation. That's a change they want us to reconsider. And then town, one thing that state code, and I put in our folder what the state code requires in terms of general plan. One thing they talk about is the use of town or public lands. And there are proposals for potential uses out here north of the town hall. That would be something to take a look at in our general plan. So
who's they?
Who's they?
Yeah, I mean, as far as they.
So the Arts Council came to the town council to suggest something. The town council said take that to the planning commission and talk about it in the general plan. So that was some direction that was received. And subsequent at the last meeting, the town, and John didn't say this when he gave us the liaison report, but I wrote it down in my notes from the town council meeting that the general plan needs to reflect priorities for capital projects. And the town council wants the PC to hold public input process to explore uses of land north of town hall to include in the general plan. So that would be a component of a general plan update. So those are all things to take under consideration. Do I have any volunteers who would like to work on the general plan? You're all jumping up and down.
I'm looking at you.
Oh.
Yeah.
If you want to wait until summer, I can do it. But I can't do it right now.
Daryl, how about you?
Yeah, I can help.
Okay. We can start and then see where it takes us. And it may turn out we get to our joint meeting and they say, all you have to do is change section 4.2 and, you know, it'll be easy. Okay. Does that fly with everybody that, you know, we sort of separate this off as an activity to try to digest it in a way that we can then bring it back and have a discussion about how much community input we need and all of that. Okay, so the decision, if this is for the minutes, on item 10, on item 11 on our agenda is the process for is we've created a committee that consists of Commissioner Tosta and Commissioner Fuller, and we will take a closer look at what we may want to update, and then we will also pay close attention in the joint PCTC meeting on what questions, and I'm going to Daryl, you and I may want to meet before we have that joint meeting to pull out what some of the questions we have are and float them in that joint meeting then. Does that work?
Yeah, that makes sense.
And
yeah.
Everybody okay if we tackle that? Several of you did make comments in it already, so we've got those comments to work from. Okay, clear as mud. Okay, number 12. Discussion on code changes to allow duplexes. So this was a very explicit request to the PC from the TC that we look at our duplex code and we consider, or we look at our code to consider how we might allow duplexes. And if you could pull up this draft code, I took John's direction, which as I said, was very explicit and just put it in the code. And so that's what we have to review here. If you go to the duplex and then the code, and I put it in ordinance form so we could have a robust discussion on it. I used the Utah, which was a little different than John's. I used the Utah state code definition of duplex. It seems to me to be cleaner to do that. So on page, if you scroll down, the yellow are the changes. So under 153.011 definitions, we add a definition of duplex. So it means a single building having two separate living units, and that's what the state code definition of duplex is. If you scroll down to B, this just adds clarity that this district provides not just single family large lot, but large lot, low density, with a density of one dwelling unit or a duplex for each 5 acres. So it provides that potential, and similar to the medium density residential district. There was nothing in the GMU that defined single family being limited. Tina.
Okay, so wait a minute. You got that under low density, and it's not 5 acres, it's 1 acre in that situation. Oh, no, it's low density residential. I'm sorry, high density. Sorry, my bad. But,
that's okay. Yeah, these were the only two in our zoning. And, you know, zoning's going to come after the general plan. That was one of the things we've been talking. I know Colleen's been waiting.
You're going to wait till I'm gone.
These are the only two zones that had any specific mention of single family that necessitated putting duplex in here. The GMU and the high density don't say anything about single family. So it wasn't necessary to, you know, it's implied that, you know, you could potentially do it. And this thing comes around later to the table of uses. Our love, the table of uses that we just love. So stop me. I'm just going to go through this. If anybody has issue with it, just stop me and, you know, we can fix it. So the table of uses, I added duplex in here. John had this in his recommendation slightly different. He was going to change the definition of single family. It seemed to be cleaner to just say duplex, since we've defined duplex. I did put a potentially compatible under the GMU, but, you know, I didn't have a really good reason for it, other than it seems like putting more houses in DMU isn't where you want to put them, but it could be permitted. So in a GMU, you have a duplex, you have an ADU, you have, this gets back to our zoning and GMU, and do we have any zoning that's really green space and all of that, that, requires the zoning discussion. So we can make it P. I put PC in here, but anybody have any opinion?
Can I add one other thing? If we're looking at the table of contents, can we just fix the gravel pit thing?
This is entitled duplex code.
Yeah, exactly. Please don't get us on another direction. It's already 9 o'clock.
Concrete plant in existing gravel. No, no, no. Okay. Borrow pits, right. Don't we? We have borrow pits, but not gravel pits, right?
I knew that. Somebody.
Yeah, this is a whole, that was a whole different discussion that we had with Ray, right? That.
Yeah.
The table of uses needs work, and you know, someday, right?
I'm fine with it just being good in all zones. I'm currently aware of some duplexes in GMU that are perfectly fine.
Yeah. All right. Can we just say this too? That really, what I wanted to say before was that, I mean, a duplex, in my opinion, is a residence. And so, and maybe a residence with an ADU kind of attachment. I mean, do we allow duplexes to have another ADU? I mean, it's a duplex, or is that already set? Those are kind of questions we can talk about. But I don't think it matters whether it's a duplex or a residence in any zone.
And I do think an ADU is allowed, even if you have a duplex. Although, well, yeah, I think it's allowed, but we may have to look at our code to clarify that. So our ADU code needs some, that's a different thing on our list. You have a comment?
I'm debating a comment.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can put this in for clarity's sake. And also, I guess the question it brings up for me is, like, there are building permits being approved in Boulder right now for houses that are duplexes. So how necessary is this, I guess? Maybe it's not illegal right now. If we want to put it in, I think that's great. But let's just make it compatible, because it's they're approving duplexes as we speak.
This is direction from the town council. I'm simply following orders.
So I guess what I'm saying is
I don't always
good
do
in
so.
All zones. Go for it. Yeah.
Tina, are you waving or do you have a comment?
You're muted.
Okay. Oh. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. For Elena's sake, the reality is that every house can have a duplex, but they call it an internal ADU. Right. So there is that option is already exists. To have a duplex possibly means that you can rent both of them. Is that correct? And you don't have to live on the property.
That's correct. And it's separate living. An internal ADU isn't necessarily separate. You know, that it, because it can be a bedroom or something, right? I mean,
a living dwelling. It's a dwelling, which I would assume would be also a kitchen. But anyway, yeah. That's why there's building permits that are being done that have probably two different dwellings within the building. That's my point.
Because they're being considered internal ADUs.
Yeah, because that's legal now.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, we're all good so far. Let's get to the next one. It's in the parking. So two spaces for each living unit. Elena made a comment that should we make it that RSTRs are not allowed in duplexes?
It might be for the RSTR code, though. I just wanted to mention it.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be nice if duplexes could be long-term housing rather than RSTRs. But
yeah, because otherwise it's just another thing intended for housing that's not used for housing. And it's just...
Although if we're...
Again, we're also talking about the fact that there's any person who wants an internal ADU, which is the same. Why aren't we talking about triplexes?
What are you drinking, Tina?
I'm ready to end the meeting, sorry.
Yeah, I know. We've covered a lot of ground. Okay. Yes, it would be in the RSTR code. So we don't have to consider it here. So I'm going to mark this resolved.
Yeah, move on from that.
And that's it. This is our duplex code. Are we okay with this? If we are, then we'll have a public hearing on it because we're changing our land use code. So at our next meeting, we will have a public hearing on this code.
So can I just ask a quick question? If as far as your question about the RSTRs, when we redo the RSTR, could we put something in there that said that we could that they wouldn't be allowed in
right.
there? Eventually, I mean, if we're going to do the, thank you.
Yeah, we could.
Yeah, thank you.
And it would count towards the number anyway. So
yeah, you know,
all right. So we made a decision here.
I'm going to make a motion. To make a motion.
I don't know if we need to make a motion because we will adopt it at our next meeting. If you want to make a motion, you can.
Okay. this is Elena. I make a motion to have a public hearing on Ordinance 2025B on duplexes at our next meeting in April.
I'll second that, Colleen.
Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Okay, unanimous Sorry, I'm supposed to repeat the motion, aren't I? Shame on me. It was a motion to approve 2025 ordinance 2025B for a public hearing at our April 17th Planning Commission meeting, and the vote to support that was unanimous. All right, 13. Agenda item 13, Joint Town Council Planning Commission meeting. John indicated that we will talk about the general plan priorities. We may talk about staff support. You saw what the request I made to town council at their last meeting. And then since then, Lacey resigned. So, you know, we are challenged. I'm challenged just on some of the support aspects of this. So it would be helpful to know that we had someone that was paying specific attention to planning commission activities. So affordable housing, that was another one John put on his list. And website change, that's what I wrote down, which I guess would include the kinds of things we'd like to see on the website. But so those were the things I wrote down from his report earlier on what we would do in a joint meeting. Tina, you are the one, I think, who suggested we hold a joint meeting. So I'd like to come back and say, are there other topics we need to address? Anybody have anything outstanding that they think we need to sit in a room with the town council and try to resolve?
Well, I think that it would be nice if the process, for sure, of, you know, of the communication, so that, you know, the town council says, agrees and votes and sends us a directive, would be great. And that we could also do that similarly. We could say, these are the things that we have found that probably need some attention, that we need to put probably on her, on our to-do list, and they can decide whether or not, I mean, they can prioritize, right? The town can prioritize what we do, but it seems like there should be a little bit more of a two-way communication. So what we find can go to the town council as a possibility of, you know, being prioritized, or at least given some understanding of, or giving them information about what we're finding to be a problem or issues.
Okay.
In dealing with land use ordinances.
When I, at the last town council meeting, I gave an update on what we're working on. And one of the last points I made was the challenge of us laying out the things we think need to be addressed and then having the town council lob things at us with short timelines, like the RSDR code, the duplexes. Both of those came at us in January and weren't on our list of priorities. We are advisory to the town council, yeah. But I also think, you know, when we see things, and we've probably, how many tonight did we identify? I mean, the table of uses, we know CUPs, we know the commercial code needs attention, we know zoning needs attention. I mean, we know all of these things that are within our purview. So, but I think that's a good point, Tina, for us to be able to have that process conversation, that communication conversation.
Yeah, I think so too.
Any other topics? Is March 27th, does that work for everybody? The town council picked that date and I said I would check in with you. Tina, you're muted again.
I thought they decided that maybe, didn't John say something about April?
We had said something about April, and I brought that up at the town council that we thought April would be better, but the town council decided it would be March 27th. So can we all make that?
Yep.
Okay, Colleen, Nick, Elena, Daryl, Tina.
Well, I'm looking. I think so.
Okay, that's like 2 weeks. At 7 here. Okay, and we get an extra week between this meeting and our next PC meeting, because as of April, we will be meeting on the 3rd of the month, or the 3rd Thursday of the month. Sorry. Okay. Anything else on our joint meeting? Summary of meeting actions. We passed the bylaws, and we're going to, I will transmit that to the town council with the note about orders of the commission. We gave Tina and Nick guidance on the RSTR code and did get lots of good input, but I agree with you, Elena, that it would have been good to say RSTR input at the beginning of that pegboard so that, you know,
yeah.
But I think I was surprised at the comprehensive responses we got. General plan, we agreed we'd have a committee and we'll come up with some questions and have further discussion with the town council on March 27th. Duplexes, we had a motion to put this code that we have in front of us to a public hearing at our April meeting. And we did agree to meet with the town council on March 27th. So our April meeting is a public hearing on the RSTR code. So the way I hope, Tina and Nick, you can, you know, draft something in the next couple of weeks and then maybe have comments that we can offer, you know, as working comments, and then that draft document with our comments will be what the public sees for our public hearing. So that gives an opportunity, you know, to weigh in, but not make any decisions until after we hear public comment. And then the duplex code public hearing, and then general plan, I think a little more detail on how we're going to tackle that. And then I would like to put together a to-do list at our next meeting, maybe come out of what we hear from town council, but also just keeping track of all the things when we go through our code and we say that needs to be fixed. So we know CUPs need to be fixed. I'll just say that out there. Anything else? All right, agenda item 16. Final public comments, anybody?
17.
17?
There's 17 on mine, but if it's that on yours, go for it. How did that happen? Sorry, I didn't mean to confuse things.
Okay. It should be.
16 on mine is general plan, process, and assignments.
That one I didn't change, so I just copied and pasted. Last time I did change it this one.
No, it's 16, or 16 is final public comments.
Just ignore me then, I guess.
anybody have any comments? Nobody. Everybody wants to go home. Okay, I'll entertain a motion.
I make a motion to adjourn the meeting. This is Elena.
I'll second it, Colleen.
Any discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Thank you, Tina, for joining us, making the effort.
Tina, you're muted.
You're muted, yes, but... we know.
Thanks, Tina.
Thank you. Bye. Safe travels.
Where is she?
She's in.